You're listening to Don't IEP Alone with Special Education Advocate Lisa Leitner. For more information about Lisa, the IEP Toolkit, and more ways we can help you in your process, go to adayinourshoes.com. Now back to the show with your host, Lisa.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Don't IEP Alone podcast. I'm Lisa Leitner with you here today. By the time this gets published, it'll be, you know, a little while. Feeling a little bit somber today because yesterday we learned that one of my son's former schoolmates, he just graduated in June, but he unfortunately passed away over the weekend, and it was sudden and unexpected. And he, you know, I don't want to say thankfully, but he died peacefully in his sleep. So, I mean, if there's anything positive to say, we can say that we at least think he didn't suffer. But now that I've had that news, been sitting with it for 24 hours, you know, it's a lot. And, you know, give your kids that extra hug. And just by coincidence, yesterday I crashed my site when I was trying to do something, adayinourshoes.com. I crashed it and it wasn't accessible. And if it was going to happen, it's, I guess, good that it happened yesterday, because it was just like, eh, so what, you know? Yeah, my site is down and that sucks, but, you know, that's not a real problem. You know, because it's all about perspective. So anyway, give your kids an extra hug today. Be thankful for who they are. Don't take anyone for granted. I had that discussion with my younger son yesterday on the way home from practice. And we had just been arguing with, he and his brother haven't been getting along lately. And so I just said to him, you know, don't take him for granted. None of us is guaranteed a tomorrow, and things happen. So anyway, let's move on to IEEs, which is Independent Education Evaluation. It is a provision of IDEA. This is our last in the series about IEP evaluations. So please listen to episodes 1, 2, and 3 if you haven't already. But we talked about going through the evaluation process, requesting evaluations, the evaluation report, re-evaluations, all that fun stuff. But let's say you get to that evaluation report meeting or re-evaluation report meeting, or you're reading the report, whatever, and you do not agree with it. You do not agree with their findings. That is when you consider requesting an independent education evaluation, or IEE. Now, let's be clear. I want to clear up any myths and, like, kind of urban legends that float around regarding IEEs, because they are numerous. One of the biggest urban legends is that you have a right as a parent, that you have a right to an IEE. You do not have a right to an IEE. You have the right to ask for one. The school does not have to give you one. Now, what is an IEE? In addition to it being an independent education evaluation, which you understand why I keep saying IEE, it's just that. It's having an independent evaluator assess your child, because you do not agree with the report of the school's evaluations. The most common one, and I don't have any data to support this, but anecdotally, I can tell you the most common one that I ever talk about with parents is, the slang term for it is a neuropsych, which is just kind of short for a neuropsychological evaluation. They are done by a neuropsychologist. I have information about them on my blog, adayinourshoes.com. The second most common one that I've heard parents talk about and request is an educational psychological evaluation or an ed psych eval. My own son has had an IEE, but he had it, he had a feeding eval. And the only reason that we went the IEE route and the school district was very agreeable. I didn't have to push on this is because they didn't have someone on staff to do a thorough feeding eval. And they agreed that he needed a feeding eval, and you know, that was kind of done from the get-go. It wasn't a matter of me getting a report and disagreeing with it. It was, hey, his feeding skills need to be assessed, and the school district said, you're right, but we don't have anyone. And that one was relatively inexpensive. I should add that a neuropsych around here, and I'm in the Philadelphia area, around here you're going to pay $5,000 to $7,000. So this is why this is something that needs to be considered seriously, thoughtfully, intentionally, and so on. Because the truth is, right, like we would all love to have a neuropsych on our child because they are a good neuropsych is, they're just so amazing. And I've had so many parents say, oh my gosh, this is the first time that someone has really understood my kid and really gets him. They're fantastic reports. They're chock full of really nitty gritty information and recommendations. But that doesn't mean that the school district should just hand them out to everyone who wants them, because that's a lot of money. You can also check your insurance plan to see if it's covered. It might be. And that might be a route for you to take. You can also sometimes, and I don't want to mention any specific universities, but I do know that here in Philadelphia, there was a university and they were, what were they doing? They were training graduate students or PhD candidates or something. And so they were looking for kids who wanted, you know, or whose parents wanted them to have a neuropsych. And they were doing it at really reduced cost. It was like $1,000 or $1,500 or something like that. And it was a PhD candidate working with their advisor. And that's why they were doing it at such a reduced cost. And that was, I'll just say, it's the university here in town. Their colors are red and white, and they're in North Philly. But I don't want you to bombard them with information or with requests if they're not currently doing them. But, you know, you can look around at your local colleges, universities, for people who have PhD programs in this and see if maybe they do something similar. That might be a way to get one. So when you request an IEE, and so this is the, if you learn nothing else from this podcast, I want you to heed this information. And that is, if you request an IEE and the school district is of the opinion that they are justified in declining that request, they are required to file for due process. It's written into IDEA. If a school district is going to decline a parent's request for an IEE, they are required to go to due process and defend their evaluations. A lot of parents don't know this. And so when you combine that bit of truth, that little truth bomb, when you combine that with parents thinking that they have the right to an IEE, you can see the chaos that it would cause, right? Because parents file, you know, they request an IEE and the school district says no, and they send you the paperwork and it says, nope, we're declining your request, and oh, by the way, we filed for due process. That catches many parents off guard. And in fact, there's another little group that I work with. I don't want to give the name of them either, but it's a nonprofit group, and we help parents with their IEPs. And someone else on the IEP committee with me said something to the effect of, well, all these kids need an IEE. And it's like, no. We don't want to be giving the advice that every parent should request an IEE. Because that's what happens, is that parents are shocked because a few days later they get this thing in the mail that says, hey, nope, you can't have the IEE, and, you know, lawyer up and buckle up because you're going to due process. Because the other piece of that is, at least here in Pennsylvania, once you receive that PWN, and I have another episode on PWNs, but once the parent receives that PWN or NORIP that says no IEE and we filed for due process, that parent has 10 days to decide what they're going to do. And 10 days is not a lot of time to make that decision of, am I going to pay an attorney and fight this in due process, right? There are things that you can do as a parent to strengthen your argument for an IEE. I've given a lot of those tips in the first three episodes. And again, it's, you know, I'll revisit one of them, and that is to not request specific assessments. Because if you request a specific assessment and they do that assessment, and let's just say it's some kind of reading assessment or an ADOS, right? An ADOS is a diagnostic tool for autism. Let's say they do the ADOS and it says no autism, and you requested that. So now your child doesn't qualify for an IEP under autism because they did the ADOS that you requested. When you go to request that IEE, you've weakened your argument, right? Because the school is going to say, no, you requested the ADOS, we did it. Here's our raw data, here are our results. And you're, you know, according to our findings, your child doesn't have autism. So anyway, it's just little things like that. Like, you just want to request, again, in areas, suspected areas of disability, to keep it, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for there. But some of the reasons that you would request an IEE, of course, you know, you disagree with the findings. You might find that they do not have qualified people. So you want to familiarize yourself when you're reading those evaluation reports and re-evaluation reports. Go online, look at the websites, and see what the protocols call for as far as a qualified person. You know, like if it's an evaluation that says, you know, only an SLP can administer this evaluation, and they had the OT did it, you know, that might be an open door for you to get that IEE. The other thing that you want to do is, when you read these evaluation protocols, is look at who the assessment is for. So, for example, if your child has dyslexia or suspected dyslexia, and they gave some type of assessment that was very reading intensive, you know, that wouldn't be appropriate, because if you believe that your child is struggling with reading, obviously they're going to struggle with a reading-based assessment. You know, you want to make sure that it's normed for your child. If your child has visual impairments, autism, you know, whatever it is, you want to make sure that they used the appropriate assessment for them. Now, once you get an IEE, let's say your school district agrees to it, and you get this IEE, keep in mind that the school district only has to consider the information presented to them by an outside evaluator. This is why it's kind of better to, you know, some advocates believe, and I'm not sure where I actually fall on this, it depends on the situation, but some will say, get the school district to pay for the IEE rather than doing it on your own, even if you have the means to do that, because they're more likely to heed the information in an evaluation that they paid for. I have, just through, 10 or 12 years of experience, I have not found that to be the case. I'm genuinely surprised at how many school districts agree to an IEE, and the IEE makes a ton of really solid recommendations, and the school says, yeah, well, we're not doing that. Again, I'm really surprised at how often that happens. I also have a podcast episode here in the, and you can look for it in the old listings, that I did with an attorney from out in Doylestown. And he talks about doing a unilateral IEE. And that is, you go ahead and do the IEE and then request that the school pay for it. And his strategy is that, well, if you have an IEE that very much differs, the information is very different from what the school district evals say, then you've really made the case that an IEE was warranted, right? Because the information is so different. So it makes sense that they got it wrong. Again, this is not something to be entered into lightly. Be thoughtful about it. It's not one of those things that you should just read your eval report and be like, that's it. I'm going to send an email and request an IEE. You need to be thoughtful and intentional in your argument. So if the school district only has to consider the information, what's the point, right? I get that a lot. Like, well, why bother? Well, for one, if you can get the school district to pay for it, I think that more information is always good. I mean, the other piece of it is that if you have an IEE report, that is going to strengthen your argument should you go to mediation or due process. So if we could play out a scenario where, okay, you do the school evals and you don't agree with them. You request an IEE, school district says yes, you do that IEE. The IEE findings are very different from what the school found. Not very different, but more, you know, more, they can be very different. So let's just say this. So the IEE is very different. It makes specific recommendations. It often, these IEE reports will often make specific intervention recommendations. So now you're thinking, okay, cool. I have this IEE report in hand. Now I know exactly what my child needs. I'm going to hand this report to the school district and they're going to say, you know, they're certainly going to say yes after seeing this report. And the school district still says no. Now, if you've been following me for a while, you know that I don't generally make it a practice to try to figure out why people do the things they do. So I don't know why a school would look at an IEE report with specific recommendations and say no, right? They don't have the money. They don't have the staff. Who knows? I do believe that there's a piece of it that is that they look agreeable to some degree because they agreed to your IEE. But they also, sometimes it feels like a game of chicken where they know that you have this information now, but are you really going to go through with it and file for due process if they say no? Because a lot of parents won't, right? A lot of parents will just assume that an attorney is too expensive. They may not know that in some cases you can recoup your attorney fees from the district, things like that. So sometimes it really can feel like a game of chicken where they're just saying, yeah, now you have this information. Let's see if you're really going to go all the way and get this for your child. How you proceed, of course, is up to you. I always recommend to parents that they at least explore all the options. And by that, I mean, read up on and learn what it's like to go to mediation. Visit an attorney, right? Do the consult. A lot of attorneys don't do free consults anymore. And I have to agree with that because too many parents were wasting their time just trying to get free information and who had really had no intention of ever hiring an attorney. But a consult, you know, I just paid for one for my son for a different issue. It had nothing to do with the IEP. It was about guardianship and all that fun stuff. But she charged us just $100 for the initial consult. And you know what? We got the information we needed and now we know how to proceed and we're going to use her and all that. But I would say spend that $100, $200 it is for the attorney to hear your story and let you know if you have a case for due process or not. And the other piece is,
you know, maybe you have the means to secure for your child whatever it is the IEE recommends on your own nickel, as my grandmother would say. You know, maybe you can afford that reading intervention, that social skills intervention, that executive functioning coach, whatever it is. Maybe you can afford that on your own. And I don't like letting schools off the hook for the responsibility. But at the same time, you know, families are dealing with a lot, and you might be dealing with a tough stretch at your job. Maybe health issues of yourself, an aging parent, things like that. Like, we all can only fit so much on our plates. And if you have the means to do it on your own and get your child what they need, then, you know, yeah, go ahead and do that. I've had some parents say, well, I'm not going to do that because then my child's going to make progress and then the school will never, they'll never agree to what I ask for because my child's, they're going to think that my child's making progress because of them. And it won't be because of them. It's because of this outside service that I'm paying for. That, to me, you know, sometimes I've said to people, you know, say that again out loud. Because when you say that, because then my child will make progress. Like, isn't that what we all want? For our kids to make progress? You know, you can collect data and do all kinds of things with your outside service that can demonstrate that it was that and not the school. You know, sometimes we have to choose our battles. So I know if I had, you know, that's my Powerball dream, which I just didn't win again. I often joke that I should just drive down Route 41 and throw my $10 out the window. But instead, I stick it in the Powerball machine to get a ticket, 5 tickets. But, you know, my Powerball dream is to give so many kids what they need because this stuff is expensive. And I wish that would come true, but so far it hasn't. But anyway, but if you have the means and it doesn't require $1.8 billion, if you have the few hundred or few thousand bucks to do the service privately, I would, you know, I would strongly consider it. All right, I am going to drop a link in the show notes about how to request an IEE and all that other good stuff. If you have any other questions, you can always join our chat forums at forums.adayinourshoes.com. Every question on there is answered by an advocate. We usually get to all of them within a couple of days, so hang tight. You know, it's not instant, but we do all check in several times a week. But you can make an account there and, you know, ask your question. Have a great rest of your day, and remember, hug your kids.
Thank you for listening to Don't IEP Alone with special education advocate Lisa Leitner. We're so glad you've joined us and would love to connect with you outside of the show. For more information about Lisa, the IEP Toolkit, and more ways we can help you in your process, go to adayinourshoes.com. From self-care tips to common IEP mistakes, there's even more to explore. Don't forget to rate and review the podcast and subscribe to never miss an episode. Until next time, don't IEP alone, and you don't have to.